All right. Welcome, everybody. Good to be back. I'll start by going around and saying hello to everyone, which seems particularly appropriate after sabbatical, starting with Ellen, Gwyn, and Joan, Pat, Jeff and DC, So-on, Rosemary, Catherine, Jeannie, Doshin, Shoketsu, Kemio, Susan, Bob K, Tyler, Yeshe, Mark, Marv, Paulette, Jim, Mary, Ava, Vin, Alice, Mike, Ellen, another Ellen, Mick, Abdullah, Bob, Karen, and Ruthann. So we're thinking about this when we end up in the Zendo, I will still have a laptop. The Zoom people will be up on a screen that the Zendo can see, but also I will have a laptop so I can say hi to everybody. And then what we usually do with the Zendo is we go around and say everybody's names, and then everybody says the person's name after them. So we'll have to find out exactly how that works. But I suppose it could be something that you do at home as well. You could repeat after me so that you kind of get to know people's names. Although it's convenient on Zoom because everybody's got their name on them, so you don't really have to learn it. But all right. Welcome. In terms of announcements. As I think everybody knows, what we're going to do, what everyone's going to do regarding COVID is a ever-changing situation. So we have a page on our website, because I realized there was all these different places on the website that talked about it, but then you have to go to all those different places and change any updates. So there's one page which has, like, you know, kind of COVID updates, and all the other places point to that page. So you can check that to see what kind of the latest is. So I think unless things get considerably worse, we are still planning to open the Zendo for in-person participation by fully vaccinated people. And they need to show us your vaccination card. You can submit it via a form beforehand and just get on a list. Or you can show up and show it that time and get on the list. And now I thought, all right, well, we're going to do that and then we won't use masks. But now it looks like probably we will use masks as well and probably limit chanting. And I don't know. So it's a moving target, but I still really, I'm sure it's the same with everybody. I really want to get back to in-person stuff. Even if you can't come to our Zendo, I'm sure you're looking forward to in-person stuff. But as I've told a few people already, we are hard at work setting up our Zendo. At this point, it's just in the planning stages, but setting up our Zendo to have a meaningful Zoom participation aspect as well. So I'm sure there'll be some adjustments. I'm thinking actually that it's good that we've postponed the timing of this trying to do this hybrid thing until August 23rd, when our in-person retreat is, because that will kind of give us that week of retreat to do some live testing and get some bugs worked out before we're trying to, you know, host a big Sunday meeting. So stay tuned about that stuff. There is an updated Tuesday study schedule. Can anybody think of anything else I should be mentioning at this point? We haven't started mentioning it in the newsletter yet, but we should. There will be a term student program in the fall. So the on the website under term student, I think it's under our practice, and yeah, it usually is in the top like quick link menu, but it may not be there yet. But if you look on the term student page, it has the dates, but you can also look on the calendar. So there's an opening retreat and a closing retreat. There's a couple 1-day retreats in the middle that we recommend, but those are open to everybody. So if you're interested in the term student retreat, term student program, that is, which the newsletter will explain, please look at that and save the dates. Any questions or other things I should mention?
Is there any update on the picnic?
Oh, yeah. I think we should just say, all right, Saturday, August 14th, Cedar Hills Park in the shade, even if it's 100 freaking degrees. We're just going to, if a couple sturdy souls will meet and we'll like, I don't know, whatever it is at that time, safely distanced, but it's outdoors. Just so if you're in the area and you just want to see people in the flesh. Saturday, August 14th at 4 p.m. And Cedar Hills Park, they're on the, yeah, in the newsletter, they have a link to the map. And probably we'll just bring our own food and hang out. All right, anything else? All right. Okay. So as I said in the newsletter, I was going to do, this is going to be a little bit of an unusual talk in that I'm going to give a little report, if you will, from my sabbatical, but also, you know, sabbaticals are about getting some perspective, you know, clarifying priorities. They enable you to, you know, what's next. So want to talk something about what's next for us as a Sangha as well. So just briefly, I if you didn't know, I was on sabbatical for the month of July. And I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity to be able to do that. It's a real sign of our Sangha's maturity that everything was able to be fully staffed while I was away, and there were talks and classes and discussions, and it felt really strange not to be involved. And I kept on kind of wondering, like, should I check in? Should I make sure everything's okay? And then I realized, well, I guess people will let me know if it's not. So it was a good thing, good practice to put that down. And I thanks to all who helped make that happen. And I hope the Sangha remained a welcoming and vibrant place of practice in my absence. And, you know, if you have any comments or suggestions, because I am playing with the idea that this would be something that I would do each year. And so then in July, I would do that, and it'd be kind of preparation. And then probably the precept classes that are led by senior students would happen earlier in the year, because as it was, it kind of went from precept classes to July classes led by students. So I might do the precept classes earlier in the year, then I would lead Tuesday classes for a while, and then there'd be July. So if you have any suggestions, feel free to write to me at email me. And the senior members of the Sangha who have received Jukai, I will be calling you to a meeting to kind of reflect on how all of that went and where we're going in the future, a teachers advisory council meeting. And I think I'm going to do it Wednesday, August 11th, 6:30 to 8:00, but I'll send you an email to remind you. So we can talk a little bit about what's happening. I also on sabbatical set aside the work that I've been doing for the last year and a half, National Administration for Extinction Rebellion Group. So that was a big set aside as well. So for those who know me, you're probably not surprised that I didn't rest a lot. But my teacher Gyokoko would say, and this is what I really feel, that change can be as good as a rest. So it wasn't so much that I just slept all the time or, you know, laid on the couch reading mysteries, but I was doing different things than I usually do. So it was good for me to put things down for a while that I feel great personal responsibility for, that I end up with a deluded sense that it all depends on me. And it's good to recognize in what ways things don't all depend on me, because it ends up being a kind of compulsive relationship. I also had lots of time to take care of things I don't usually take care of. I usually don't have time to take care of. So on most days, I manage to do a task, at least one task, usually a couple, that I called them round to it tasks. So in my little daily journal, I drew a circle and I said to it in it. And so that's my round to it. So I've gotten around to it and I can do this task. So a huge pile of crap on my kitchen table. That's where everything goes. And then I just don't have time to deal with it. Like months, maybe years worth of stuff piled up there. So that's cleared off, you know, that kind of thing. And that was satisfying to be able to take care of those things. Spent time with good Dharma friends. That is always very nourishing. A visit from my 16-year-old nephew from Minnesota and his dad. Went to the Japanese garden and had a nice visit. And then I also had to work, right? I did 3 podcast episodes, preparing for Zendo Zoom, right with Zen board meeting, you know, that kind of stuff. I had a friend write and ask me, and I think these were interesting questions. What did you learn or unlearn on your sabbatical? And are you finding yourself more rested and refreshed? So I'm definitely finding myself more rested and refreshed, ready and willing to roll up my sleeves and engage. The creativity, the enthusiasm has returned. The weariness, resistance, resentment, frustration, burnout, you know, subsided, especially around my climate work. Don't really feel so much of that around Zen or around the Sangha, but the climate work in particular. So what did I learn or unlearn? It's a very good question. So in one piece, as I was doing this massive spring cleaning of my house, I thought, you know, I should think carefully before acquiring a new object and think ahead toward getting rid of that object. Do I really want responsibility for having to get rid of this object at some point? Is it going to be easily passed on? But on a more serious note, like I said, sabbaticals are supposed to give you a bigger perspective. Stand back, reflect on priorities, see how things fit together. So what I learned, what I realized, was that I guess I absorbed, came to terms with, woke up to the real extent of our climate and ecological emergency. I have been active in the climate movement for at least several years, as many of you know. And I've always been attuned to environmental issues. I got my master's in wildlife science and I took a big long hiatus to do my Zen practice, but then I came back to those concerns. And I've been half time with Extinction Rebellion for the last year and a half, but I still don't think I comprehended or accepted the actual severity of the crisis that we're in. No matter how bad we think it is, it's actually worse. Much worse. And this is extremely difficult to face. So even right now, we can just take a few breaths. This is not easy to face, and it's not easy to hear. So bear with me for a few moments. I'm going to bring this back around to the personal and to our Sangha and to our practice. I mean, I hesitate even here to go into any kind of numbers or evidence or anything like that. I feel like there's a greater and greater appreciation in the climate emergency movement that doesn't really help all that much. But I guess just briefly, I want to say, some of you may be familiar with the IPCC. So that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So it's the UN body meant to review the science and make recommendations to governments. And that was founded in 1988. So 33 years ago, the UN identified this as a big enough problem to form a permanent body about it. And what the scientists have predicted was going to happen, starting more than that, 40 years ago, because if by the time you get a UN body, right, this issue's been around for a while. The scientists have been predicting exactly what's happening now. Everything, almost everything has come to pass, except it's usually been worse or happening sooner. And then the IPCC released a report, 2018, saying we have until 2030, or by 2030, we need to cut our greenhouse gas emissions in half and also add carbon removal technologies that don't actually exist yet at scale. So that was a big deal because that was the first report that kind of gave us a deadline. So people really like, so what are you talking about here? As long as it's kind of in the future, it's hard to get your mind around. But when they like, all right, we have this long to avoid like catastrophic results. And you know, you gotta look at this as, this is a conservative body. This has representatives from 195 countries. Like for them to come onto consensus about something and it's gonna be politically mitigated and everything, for them to say it. This is not like a way far left, crazy, radical organization that is saying this. And since that report, since 2018, our greenhouse gas emissions have gone up every year. So anyway, that's the dry and boring stuff. How do we absorb this stuff. Even if we don't want to live in denial, how do we absorb it? I think the biggest issue of all is a sense of powerlessness. We feel culpable, and if you don't feel culpable, you feel affected. But a sense of powerlessness is just too much, too overwhelming, too depressing to dwell on it, especially if there's nothing we can do. But our desire, as I think everyone here knows, our desire to ignore the problem is becoming more and more difficult. So, and bear with me here, there will be some uplifting parts of this talk. So, those of us in the West experienced the heat dome at the end of June. And in Portland here, got to be 116 degrees. Presumably that was in the shade, because I think in the sun it was even hotter, which is completely unheard of. And I have a beautiful backyard that I have been working on for years, planting native plants. I have a beautiful, like 16-foot tall Western hemlock tree that's been thriving for the 6 years since I planted it. And on that Monday where it got so hot, partway through the day, I saw that the needles on the sunny side of the tree were all turning brown. And by the end of that day, that side of the tree was just that the needles had fallen off. And I thought maybe the whole tree had died. And that is like, it was extremely disturbing. You know, I can let like, okay, you know, a tree doesn't survive in my yard. That's par for the course. But this was a tree that was thriving. And this one heat dome event almost killed it. And of course, then I think, well, what about the forests? And later I was driving to the coast. And now if depending on what direction a particular hillside faced, the forests were scorched, which is just absolutely unheard of. Unheard of. So now air conditioning units, air purifiers, so that we can close our windows when the wildfire smoke comes. These are just becoming a way of life, as are the red glow of the sun coming through the wildfire smoke. Like, that is now something that I recognize. That is now something that I, oh, must be some wildfire smoke in the air, even if I can't detect it. So then, of course, at every stage, the gap between the haves and the have-nots becomes even more extreme, because great, I can afford a couple portable AC units for when it gets really bad. I can afford the air purifiers. I can afford a house to be in, you know? So yeah, there you go. So why am I talking about this today? Zen is about facing the truth. Living in truth is the source of our liberation. And this is contrary to common sense, which says that if you can't avoid or fix a situation that causes pain, the best thing to do is just dwell on the positive. And, you know, we could say, well, we can't, as an individual, I can't do anything about the climate and ecological emergency, except, you know, I recycle and drive an electric car. I do my best. So we should just enjoy and appreciate the joys and opportunities we have for as long as we have them. And there's definitely a time for joy and rest, renewal, relaxation. And this is what I call taking care in my three-ingredient recipe for a noble and sustainable life. but to be true Zen practice, our times of joy and relaxation must not exclude reality. Appreciation of our lives must be done, can be done, with full awareness of the tragedy that is unfolding around us, of the moral imperative to respond to the crisis as bodhisattvas. And you may be wondering what all of this means to our Sangha in a practical sense. What my coming back from sabbatical and saying, this is my realization, what does this mean? What does this mean for Bright Way? What does this mean for you? Does this mean Domio is going to start talking about the climate emergency all the time? Does this mean we'll be expected to become activists? Does this mean our refuge of Sangha will be destroyed by political debates? All very good questions. And I have responses to all of them. But in essence, my response is this. Trust me. With one exception, which is all the beautiful life on this planet considered as a whole, nothing matters more to me than the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In all of my considerations of what to do with my life, Bright Way Zen features front and central. As you might consider your commitments to your children, no matter what, there is this relationship. I would have loved nothing better than to focus on Bright Way and my podcast in a specialized kind of way, growing our Zen Center programs and opportunities and deepening our Dharma study, incorporating more traditional forms and ceremonies and roles for people to train in, releasing podcasts on Buddhist history and esoteric teachings, spending more time in meditation, offering more meditation retreats. But it is as if we are now in a time of war. Our conditions have changed. Priorities have to shift whether we want them to or not. There are challenges and, frankly, horrors we need to face and deal with regardless of how we hoped our lives would go. The good thing is that Zen and the Sangha is absolutely up to the task when it comes to helping us face the climate emergency. Not only that, but although this is the last koan we would have voluntarily chosen, engaging fully with it can wake us up. It can challenge our attachments and increase our intimacy with all of life, with each other and with all of life. Living in denial, whether we want to admit it or not, living in denial takes a huge toll on us, emotionally, psychologically, physically, spiritually. Of course, facing the climate and ecological emergency isn't easy either. At best, it's extremely painful and worrying, and at worst, it can be overwhelming and depressing. Which is why we do it together, in Sangha, in community. Which is why we face our new reality with the support of our Zazen, our practice, and 2,000 years of Buddhist teachings. We can choose thoughtfully and mindfully to take time for bearing witness. Awareness, recognition, bodhisattva practice of opening up to the suffering in the world. Just as a practice unto its own. We can learn to take care within a larger context, finding joy in the midst of impermanence, sustaining ourselves with beauty and humor, companionship and art, absorbing ourselves in the Buddhist teachings for their own sake. Setting aside our concerns for a time in order to return to silence. And we can learn to take action. Finding ways to stand up for life. To demand our governments take immediate and radical action to save life on this planet. And without fucking divisiveness, judgmentalism, or attachments to outcomes. We can bring love and calm and humility to our actions. You may be worried that if the Sangha functions, as I'm proposing with the full acknowledgement of the climate and ecological emergency, we'll develop a culture where you'll be pressured to engage in some particular kind of activism you don't like, or that people will start judging you for your lifestyle choices. I am going to do everything in my power to make sure we do not develop this kind of culture. That would be toxic and counterproductive, and out of keeping with Zen. In Zen, we do our own practice. Unless somebody is disrupting your life with behavior that breaks the precepts, what they do is their own practice. We look within. And as the precepts say, to do one thing without copying others, and thereby become an example to the world. And yet we do influence one another, but through a gentle way, through doing our own practice. So you may feel some pressure to do more in response to the climate and ecological emergency, especially if we try to bring it into our consciousness more holistically. Because it is now the issue of our time. It's not just my hobby. It's not just one of many issues. It is now the issue. The greatest challenge humanity has ever faced, an emergency is becoming more and more difficult to ignore. But whatever pressure you feel to do more, as part of your practice, you carefully examine. If that pressure comes from outside, if it's about the expectations of others, including me as a Zen teacher, then I encourage you to disregard it. But if it comes from inside, from your bodhisattva nature, from your love of life, from your concern about the future of your children or grandchildren, then let's work on a way to help you manifest your aspiration. And this is a whole area of practice in and of itself, from which we can learn and grow in surprising ways. So I want to leave you with some positive, beautiful, encouraging examples of responses to the climate and ecological emergency. I think sometimes our imagination is very limited when we start to contemplate what we can do. That we're going to have to make a sign, and we're going to have to go out in the street, and we're going to have to start yelling. Okay. I mean, well, you know, isn't that what you mean? Maybe sometimes if you feel like it, but I will share with you a couple other options. And I wouldn't even say other options. I think, honestly, I do think there is a time when we need to all get in the street, but more about that later. And I'm not idealistic or airy-fairy about like, oh, and then we'll just get involved somehow, take action, and it'll just be so rewarding and lovely. I mean, I've been doing this for a few years now, and there's a lot of frustration and disappointment involved as well, the potential for burnout, particularly because it involves working with other human beings. And no matter what people are doing, people are people. So actually, I think Zen and Buddhism have a lot to offer activists. The more Buddhists they were out, are part of engaged groups, I think the better, right? We have a lot to bring into those areas. But so the challenge we're facing encourages us to think outside the box. So I am going to share my screen and show you a couple things. So the first is a book, which I highly recommend. And that is Facing the Climate Emergency, How to Transform Yourself with Climate Truth. This is a beautiful book that's only 160 pages long. I am thinking of ordering a whole bunch of copies and sending them all to my friends and family. It does an incredible job of inviting us to face the emergency with mindful compassion of our own emotional responses. And the author then, she encourages us to do this work. She's not a Buddhist, but she's done a lot of spiritual work and she's a psychologist. And she encourages us to do this for our own sake, if for no other sake. So that's where the transformation comes in. And then she also ends with a very, very practical chapter on getting involved with the climate emergency movement. And, you know, you may not be able to picture yourself doing that, but I think she does a good job of describing all the different things that are needed. In addition, you know, for every movement, there's, you know, like I've been doing admin for the last year, right? There are websites and there are spreadsheets and there's accounting to do and there's legal work and there's visual arts and poetry and research and, you know, and money is needed. So that is one positive, very encouraging thing I want to turn aim you toward. And then the next two things are activities that I was involved in during my sabbatical. So I will show you some pictures and tell you story first of so this is a boat that my Extinction Rebellion group bought on Craigslist. It doesn't really work. It has had an inboard motor, which it doesn't have anymore. So we've never put it in the water, but that's not what we wanted it for. So a friend of mine painted it. It says no safe harbor on one side and act now on the other. This pink color is a classic Extinction Rebellion color. And the lettering is classic Extinction Rebellion lettering. And then we took that, actually this was back in March, and we blocked the entrance to the Morrison Bridge. And that is me down there locked on to the boat, somebody else locked on to the other end. And yes, we have mermaids and a bumblebee on the top as well. There's always an aspect of like beauty and creativity in Extinction Rebellion actions that I really appreciate. And it's basically to disrupt business as usual and call attention, you know, so that people driving by be like, what? What's that? What are those people? What are they up? What are they on about? Why are they doing that? And we were actually risking arrest. We were blocking a road. So we totally expected that the cops might, you know, not like that. And they might come and then they'd cart us off and, you know, we'd pay the consequences. But as many of you know, the cops in Portland have bigger fish to fry these days. And so we've done multiple actions like this, and we've never come close to getting arrested. They just wait us out. So we actually did this twice, and then we drove away. We dismantled everything and drove away. So we have this big boat. So then the question is, what do we do with this big boat? What's something creative we can do? So we decided to turn the boat into a petition to the Portland City Council. It's been a year since Portland declared climate emergency. So we say, what part of climate emergency don't you understand? If we don't take radical action immediately, life and human civilization as we know it is facing utter annihilation. So then we took our petition to farmers markets and asked people to sign it. So people seemed quite eager to come up and sign the petition. And then just on Saturday, this was at downtown at the Portland Mermaid Festival, the annual Portland Mermaid Festival. So you see, we did have mermaids on our boat as well. And we invited people to sign it there. And we probably got 300. Signatures. Many of them little kids that would go down and they'd write on the bottom of the boat. So every signature here is someone who walked up to our boat and said, yeah, I am behind this petition.
For the city, yeah. I don't agree with that.
That's okay. I'm sorry, but
I'll sign it too, but just imagine.
Yeah, I climbed up the other day because I didn't know it's open.
So I was quite moved by the response that we got from people. And when we told people about our plan, which is to deliver this petition to Portland City Hall on Wednesday, August 18th at 10 a.m. or so, because that's when there's a Portland City Council meeting. They are actually on Zoom. They won't be at the building. But we do bear some kind of fantasy that they will find out in the midst of their meeting that a petition has been delivered in front of City Hall, which means pulling the boat up and taking it, unhitching it from the truck and making it so they can't easily get rid of it. So the city council members will see it. And as yesterday, one of my fellow activists was telling people, we wanted to make sure to make the petition something that they couldn't just stash away in a drawer. And we're going to have a couple press people there, and we're going to stand in front of the boat and say, this is who we are, and this is why we delivered this petition. And I don't know. Again, we will face the consequences as necessary. So that's one thing. And then I want to share a very different kind of action, which I took part in. So this was in Pacific City. And this is an Extinction Rebellion activity that we call the Red Rebels. And it's like a street theater thing that there's a particular costume. It's for men and women can participate. And you have your face painted white, and you have these flowing red costumes. So we walked up and down the beach and you move very slowly and meditatively, and you kind of follow the leader. So whoever is in the front, you know, does certain kinds of actions that portray emotions, and everybody remains silent. And then everybody behind mirrors those motions. So we did that for about an hour and 15 minutes. And it was the first time that I had done it. And I actually loved it. I mean, my fellow Reds were concerned that, you know, because they say it can be hard, you know, you have to be silent and you have to walk slowly. I'm like, I think I got that covered. As I was doing it, I'm like, Zen people would love this. This is so cool. And at one point, so here we are, and I've just driven to the coast, and I was weeping on the way, seeing the scorched forests. And here we are on a beach, and, you know, people are having fun, right? They're surfing and they're hanging out in the sand and the whatever. And as we were leaving the beach, there was a ramp, and we walked up the ramp, and then we turned and just kind of, we were looking over the beach, and we were just had our hands raised. And this is kind of the Red Rebel gesture of love. And I just felt what I felt for everyone on that beach was love. That I was doing this out of love. And I have to confess that I don't often have access to that sentiment toward human beings. More often, I would look and I would feel judgmental. I would feel frustrated. I would think, people, you're going to wake up. Come on. But it was just, I thought this was such a, I felt like this was a practice. This was a ceremony of embodied grief and love. So I am going to end with sharing a video. It's just a few minutes long, of a Red Rebel action that took place in, I believe it is Cornwall.
So I was nervous to give this talk, but I was also, thanks to sabbatical, very clear. But one thing I want to make very clear, and is that any response to what I've shared today, or what I've said, or what I've implied is my intention for the Sangha or the climate emergency or anything, any response is okay. So this is our practice. Our practice is not to all now jump on the bandwagon because Domio says we should care about the climate emergency, right? This is about, okay, oh, interesting. What's that? What is my response? And if somebody in the Sangha has a response that says, I don't know about this, I'm really worried about the Sangha. Okay. Somebody says, oh, I'm so excited. Now I want to go join Extinction Rebellion. Great. Any response, yeah, we're not looking for some particular response. All we're looking to do is to be real and authentic and engage the truth. So, oh, yes, I'll put a link to the video. And there's more stuff. You just Red Rebel Brigade is the name of that movement. And Extinction Rebellion UK, I mean, they're light years ahead of Extinction Rebellion in the US. They have like amazing videos and media and websites and all kinds of stuff. So highly recommend it. So I'll put that in the chat. So we don't have very long. I imagine we could debrief on this for like another hour probably, but I guess I'll open it up, but with the understanding ahead of time that like we're not going to really be able to, you know, answer all questions or hear all comments or whatever. This is just an opening, and we'll go on a little longer. In case you are wondering, you know, exactly, well, what does this really actually mean? I don't know yet, but I was brainstorming during Zazen that, you know, it's taken me a long time to come up with my three ingredient approach, right? Bearing witness and taking care and taking action. And so I think, you know, consciously spending some time and thoughtfully, mindfully bearing witness, you know, maybe one Sunday a month. And then one Sunday a month, maybe that is the taking action. What can that look like? If we are doing things in our lives and we're getting burnt out, what do we do about it? How do we, you know, what is that about? And then the other two might be, they're the taking care, right? How do we, and sometimes the taking care is not talking about the freaking climate emergency, right? Sometimes taking care is just, let's just talk about mindfulness. Let's just talk about, you know, so that's what I see as taking care. As long as we're doing it in a larger context and not severing the other issues from our practice environment, then there is time to just sit and just put things down and just enjoy and just reflect. So I'll open it up for the last 4 minutes or so. Go ahead and unmute yourself or raise a hand. Ellen.
I'm at the YMCA, so I hope there's no background noise. I would be like, I guess the word is honored and also relieved to be able to find a way to connect my practice with my sense of urgency about this issue. I'm always looking for concrete in everything. I guess I'm looking for concrete action, things I can do. And with a group, with this group, with the Sangha, would be especially meaningful. So I just wanted to say you have my support for sure for something like this. Yeah. And thank you for sharing all of that with us.
And I like the idea of making it very explicit what the plan is, you know. So if there was a Sunday of the month that we talk about action, you know, it's that, right? If you don't feel like participating in that, then you don't have to. So you can kind of like see ahead what the balance is going to be. And there will always be times to just set the whole question aside as well. Ruthann, did you have something?
Yes, thank you. After the word just that we say a miracle. Just reflect yourself where you're at with this. Just sit, just be with nature. Thank you for this powerful, truthful talk.
Thank you, Ruthann. And Ruthann, for the video, I can send you that by email, and then you might be able to check that out.
I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I just kind of dropped a bomb on y'all, but I hope there was also some inspiration as well. Because I think that's what, go ahead, Paulette.
No, I just wanted to say thank you. I think that this is extremely important, and I appreciate that you feel very strongly about it, because so do I. And I think it does connect to what we're doing here, mindfulness and non-violence and non-harming. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
So on.
Yeah, I just wanted to say how, you know, how moving art can be. You can see the people on the beach in that video watching this procession. And like, what is that? You know, and just the boat and how vibrant it is. And I remember in the 2000s, I was active with Code Pink. And we would wear all these bright pink outfits, and we infiltrated Clear Channel, and, you know, posed as, you know, potential interns, and showed him a pink slip. You know, I took off a slip, and here's your pink slip, and, you know, it's just that it's not lighthearted. They're doing, you know, with the costumes in red and stuff, but it's just this vibrancy to it. Mm-hmm. And boy, it's just really, you know, art and music, it can really move people, because somebody has to go to the board meetings and to the city councils, and you have to write your congressman and your governor and all that stuff too. But it doesn't all have to be, you know, boring. Activism doesn't have to be boring.
And it also, and this is what, you know, I'm not saying everybody's got to get involved with Extinction Rebellion by any means, but I highly recommend it, because it takes a different approach. It's trying to wake people up, but it also has a principle of not blaming or shaming. Since no individual is to blame, this is the system that we're trying to change. And so it usually tries to come up with some kind of, you know, because people, we're learning is people don't change because of facts. People change because of emotions. And so, you know, you just like, you know, yell at people and tell them what they should do. They're just going to get more entrenched in whatever it is that they want to do anyway. I mean, I do. So on the other hand, somebody like pontificating to me about veganism and like listing all the terrible, terrible, terrible things. And I was just had this reaction, which was like, just go away. But these like something like the Reds, because we have veils and our faces are painted, people feel they can stare at us. They can look at us. And we're not in there, you know, they can just interact with it the way that they want to. And some people would even like, when we would stay still, they would take like selfies with us, which I think is so cool. Like you're actually inviting people in. It's creative. It's thoughtful. Because in the end, you know, this is about love. This is about wanting to save life and honor life. So I'll leave it there. Thank you all for being here. And like I said, I'm happy to hear whatever kind of response you have or ideas you have or something. Please don't feel like, don't start worrying about my approval or disapproval around this area. And abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, all.
Thanks, everyone.